Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Hello and welcome to The Mentor. I'm Mark Boris. My guests this week are Sean Greenblow and Elliot Medaglia. They are Managing Director and Head of Strategy at a business called Boody, B-O-O-D-Y, a sustainable clothing brand that creates everyday essentials from eco-friendly organic bamboo. They're rejecting the notion of fast fashion and committing to building a wardrobe of quality, sustainable basics, and is otherwise known as a new movement. It's called slow fashion. Now, Sean and Elliot have an interesting story. They've been best friends since they were kids, and their dads went into business together in 2012, starting the brand called Boody. Sean's dad ran a clothing brand prior to that, and Elliot's dad was a pharmacist. And together, they saw an opportunity to sell unconventional products, underwear and socks, made out of bamboo. So they decided to create a product that was a perfect fit for the health-conscious and environmentally-minded customer. Sean and Elliot came into the business and used the groundwork that their dads put in place, and they combined their own growth mindset, their great entrepreneurship, their love of technology, and hunger to change the world for better to develop the Boody brand even further. It's now a family business run by two fathers and two sons. It's sold in 1,000 retailers across Australia. It's sold online and in 17 countries around the world. I'm going to ask Sean and Elliot about how their experience in health and wellness combined with their passion for the environment inspired them to create a sustainable product. What is a sustainable product? And how Boody uses fabrics, design and craft to deliver goods and products that are bypassing trends and committing to sustainability. And how do they ride this slow fashion movement? And how has it affected their business, especially coming out of COVID? So let's get into it. Sean and Elliot, welcome to The Mentor.
Thanks so much for having us.
Thanks for having us here.
Okay, so Boody, I mean, is it boody.com.au? What is it?
Boody.com.au.
B-O-O-D-Y.
That's right.
Well, what does that mean? Like, where does that name come from?
You got to ask our dads that one. It's a bit cheeky, no pun intended, but it's a kind of, at the beginning was a mix between bum and bamboo. And
right.
So it's
okay.
Boody.
As in booty. Yeah, booty. I get it. Okay.
But we often have that issue. It's not booty. We often get confused. People saying, "Well, what are you guys running over there?"
It's a fun recruitment tool. That's for sure.
So, Sean, what's your background?
Yeah, no, I took a great year off after school. Went into commerce and business. Did a commerce degree at Sydney Uni and then a MBA over at UNSW. Went down the corporate route because that was where I was meant to be, and it was the day I saw the guy next to me with a rear view mirror on his computer, and I asked him, "What's that for?" And he said, "So I can see when people are coming," that I realized that it wasn't for me. I moved over to technology, had a startup for a couple of years, and then went into the family business.
What's your background, Elliot?
Yeah, so similar to Sean, after school, went and studied commerce, did finance and accounting. I knew that neither of those paths in their raw form were for me. I joined a German venture capital company that was launching many startups in Australia at the time, and ended up being one of the first employees at theiconic.com.au, which is obviously now Australia's largest online fashion store. After a bit of time there, I went over to New York for 6 years, did some consulting before getting the itch to go back into e-commerce and startups, and joined a company there that was called Jet.com that was acquired by Walmart, and then spent 2 years helping Walmart build their e-commerce side of the business before getting tapped on the shoulder to come back and help the guys with the family business.
So, well, I guess what you're saying is that you're both your dads?
Correct, yeah.
So both your dads started this business off.
That's right.
Take me back. Take me back to, well, when did it start and why did they start? What's the deal?
No worries. 2012, they founded the business. My old man has an apparel background, so 30 plus years in the apparel industry, ran a big clothing company, white labeled to a lot of the big retailers here in Australia, Sports Girl, et cetera.
What does that mean, white labeled to the big names?
So it started off with some retail stores, actually. He had one in Chatswood, one in Surry Hills sports stores. Rode the sports store wave and then started manufacturing his
own. Sports stores mean sportswear.
Yeah. So he, back in the Kylie Minogue bodysuit days, he was one of the first to bring those bodysuits into Australia, actually. And then what he did was he started actually making them himself. And what
where?
He realized.
Where did he make them?
Here in Australia.
Here
in Australia. This is before everything moved over to Asia.
Right.
So he was making these clothes for his own stores and realized it was a big opportunity.
Right. So your dad's background. Is that he was a clothing manufacturer, but he also understood fashion and those sorts of things.
Yeah, he was actually he studied economics, South African, moved over immigrant with absolutely nothing. Mum and dad got married, moved over a week later, no family, one set of friends, and got an internship at Maya. And that was his foray.
How old's your dad out of interest?
Dad's just past 60.
And you guys? So how old are you, in your 30s?
Yeah.
34, 32.
34 and 32, okay. Yeah. And so you saw your dad working in this rag trade industry, I mean, he's otherwise known as a schmutter.
Yeah, totally. Alexandria, where all the schmutters were. I spent my childhood running around the, you know, warehouse floor. There were garment designers, the whole deal. When the wave over to China started, manufacturing wave over to China, he moved everything over there, built that company into quite a big company. And you asked what white label.
Yeah, what is it? What does it mean?
What they ended up doing was manufacturing for a lot of the big retailers as if it was their own. So they got orders from Sports Girl, for example, for thousands and thousands of units. They'd make the units and Sports Girl would brand them as their own.
Right, okay. So he was like a manufacturing wholesaler.
Yeah.
And he'd sell to Sports Girl their label.
That's exactly
so Sports
right.
Girl would send some sort of person, somebody, one of the designers overseas, they'd pick up whatever's the latest in America or Japan or wherever, Europe. They'd buy a couple of samples, they'd bring it back to Australia, they'd all sit around a room and they'd decide, well, this is what we're going to sell for this next season.
Yeah.
Because this is what's selling in overseas, wherever it was relevant for them, particularly sportswear. And they go along to your dad and say, maybe a couple of thousand units of these.
Yeah.
Is that the deal?
Exactly that. And it was so, as manual as you just described in those days. And I think that's one of the big learnings or mistakes that he made along that journey that he's carried over, not learned what not to do in this business.
Well, I guess in those days, that's the way he did do it. You know, because there was no computers, you couldn't take images, you couldn't get designs. You actually had to, because I remember I worked in a law firm for many years and we had a lot of rag trade clients, and they used to always, I mean, often I'd travel overseas with them for lots of reasons, and I would see them bring back suitcases full of samples. I used to wonder what the hell they do for them. And actually, what they used to do is they were made to cut the samples, so that they, when they went through customs here in Australia, that it didn't look, because in those days you couldn't bring stuff back. Mm. You had to pay duty. You had to declare it. But if it was cut as a sample, that means you couldn't wear it, you couldn't sell it. You're just buying it as a sample.
And
there's nothing wrong with borrowing other great ideas. I mean, to some extent, we followed a lot of Europe.
Yeah.
And that was that. I mean, I don't know about now. You guys are probably designing your own stuff and trying to be cutting edge and ahead of what's going on. But you do know what's going on because you pick it up off of Instagram. You don't have to fly to.
We know what's going on, but we are not about fashion. Another key learning that he took from that business,
right? Because that was fashion. You're right.
That was pure fashion, reinventing the wheel every single season. And what ends up happening with the big retailers, and it's happening today, is they get to end of season, they can't sell 30-40% of their stuff and they have to mark down and lose margin and a lot of it goes to
landfill. What happens to all that stuff?
Either goes to landfill or they try and sell it, hock it out to people at discount prices.
Serious?
And it's a huge problem. Booty is all about essentials. It's the stuff that you wear. It's season agnostic, day in, day out, undies, socks, basic tees.
Classics.
Total classics, and we will never go outside of that.
Yeah, that's interesting.
And in that way, we avoid all of those problems. The other big learning that he had from those days was he was controlled by one big retailer or two or three. You know, 80% of his business was from two or three customers, and he never wanted that again because they control you. So this is where Elliot's dad, Neil, comes in. Neil was a pharmacist, amazing retailer. He had his chain of pharmacy stores. And for how many? 30 plus years.
Yeah. So my father came over from Perth. He was a pharmacist, essentially had pharmaceutical retail stores around Sydney. Vital Pharmacy, I don't know if you remember it. But essentially, similar to Sean, I remember growing up running around the retail store, you know, in the holidays, doing the cashier, helping out wherever I could. But essentially, my dad, while he was a trained pharmacist, his skill was always the retail side of things, the front of store.
Well, which is sort of what pharmacists, I know they make good margins out of their prescriptions, but they're really retailers. I mean,
exactly.
I mean, a good one is anyway. Yeah.
And this is where this gets interesting. So essentially, he realized that obviously it's all about retail. And once he had essentially explored all the pharmaceutical goods, he could retail the non-prescription ones. He went looking for other things that he could sell in his pharmacy. And I think it was in the East Garden Shopping Centre. He saw in one of the $2 shops there was a sock stand. It was essentially $3 for $10. It's called Socks and Locks. Really good quality stuff. And he thought, okay, this actually could work in the pharmacy. It's a high moving consumer good that people need on impulse at checkout. So essentially he found out who the supplier was, connected with them, got it in the store, and it ended up being the most profitable square meter of his pharmacy.
Well, let's break that down a little, because that's really important, your point there, Elliot, and your dad's finding. I mean, because we're going to talk about the combination of the two experiences in a second, but merchandising and per square meterage is really important, and understanding that concept. If you're a merchandiser, if you're in retail, first things first, merchandising or good merchandising, what your dad noticed as a pharmacist, who probably studied chemistry at university, no one ever taught him about marketing, realised that if it's at the point of sale, like a pair of socks, and it's a bit of an impulse buy, and it is something that we see as sort of disposable. I mean, like, I'm always buying socks, throwing them out and shit like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I see it's a bargain. I can't resist it. It's really hard to resist. Because the other thing I can't resist is chocolates at the bloody checkout. I mean, that's the worst thing. When you go to a service station, I always walk out with a Kit Kat. I don't know what the hell that is.
Yeah.
But that's merchandising is clever.
Correct.
So your dad, as a chemist, worked that shit out.
Yeah, exactly. And it was at that point, he was actually getting out of pharmacy game. It was at a time where the landscape was changing. The discount guys were coming in. There was a threat of Coles and Woolworths also starting up. So it was a good time to get out. But essentially, he realized that there was an opportunity here, because the supplier of that sock stand wasn't the most sophisticated in sales. And so my dad partnered with him, and through his network, through the Australian Pharmacy Guild, he knew all the pharmacists around Australia. So he then went into the distribution side of things.
I want to break it down a little bit further, though, but just this is really interesting. I remember I had a girlfriend back in the, let me get it right now, probably the 80s or something like that, and her job was, she actually had a stand, her own stand, and she threw it in the back of the car, and she used to go around to all the pharmacies in Sydney and Greater Sydney, and actually she used to go to the country too. And on that stand, they used to have hair clips and bloody combs and all sorts of things that women use for their hair, etc. And she used to go to the pharmacies, and she would actually talk them into installing one of these stands, and explain to them, she used to tell me about this, so explain to them how much square meterage profitable something was. You know, and if you were paying so much rent for that square meter, this would be your most profitable line. And then she used to supply them a stand full of inventory. Then each month she used to go back, or whenever, she used to go back and replenish the inventory. Is that what you're talking about? Like, because, you know, like, but David Jones worked like this. Most of the big retailers work this like that these days. They're all basically real estate owners, and they rent out the space to whoever wants to sell the product.
Yeah.
And it is actually getting down to the most profitable things, or having profitable things per square meter.
Yeah.
And pharmacists are like that.
Absolutely. And especially when you're talking to a pharmacist, they're already operating on pretty low margins.
Yeah.
So if you can come into something that's got that incremental margin for them, and it's fast moving.
And moves. But you better explain what fast moving means, because a lot of people listening don't know what you're talking about. Like, fast moving consumer goods, that's a terminology.
Mm.
But what does it mean?
Well, I think essentially it means those products that are constantly
being replenished.
Being replenished.
Yeah, like toothpaste or things we run out of. Yeah. And socks, funnily enough, sounds silly, but it's one of those things we run out of. I mean, I don't know about you guys, but like when I do my washing, at least once a week, something happens, the sock gets eaten up by the machine. I don't know where hell it goes. Maybe it goes down the drain. I got no idea. I'm always one sock missing. the gym sock I'm talking about now.
Yeah. Really. Yeah.
So FMCG product.
Yeah.
Include socks is what your dad found out.
Yeah, and they need to be well priced because these fast moving consumer goods are key value items. So if a consumer sees a fast moving consumer good that's priced at a high level, they then will have a perception about your store that you are not a value driven, well priced store. So the fast moving consumer goods are usually the things that are more on the low margin side. And then the stores will make more of their money on the long tail then.
Yeah, okay, got that. So Elliot's dad worked this stuff out about merchandising, and I guess you needed somebody. Well, why this stuff? Why got in my hand now? Why are these socks made out of, what are they made out of?
This is made out of bamboo, but I'll take you back to the story about how it continues. So essentially you've got my dad's pushing the sock stand, and he's now got it in 2,500 stores around
Australia.
So
did he have someone distributing it for him? Did he have someone walking around to a chemist and say, listen, you know, all these mates at the pharmaceutical guild, look, would you like to put these in?
Yeah, so he partnered with agents and merchandisers in each state in Australia.
Who are they? How does that work?
They're essentially...
commissioned reps. Yeah. So essentially you've got reps who run their own companies. They go into... they have a network of pharmacies in their region. And they go and sell your product for you, and you pay them.
Like my girlfriend used to be. Yeah. She was one of them. Yeah. She worked for one of them.
There you go.
She got paid per commission.
And we still work with these guys today.
Absolutely. And they're very important because
they have relationships with the actual. So the pharmacist sees her coming in. They would have known her.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. And it's also important because a pharmacist is usually, pretty spread in terms of staff. And these people are looking at the stand and saying, well, that peg's missing, that peg's missing. That needs a refill, and they're coming in and constantly refilling it, making sure it looks good because there's nothing worse than an empty stand.
Bloody oath. Yeah. So, okay. So, these commission reps, commission agents for any of the products we're talking about, it could be hair combs or your socks, et cetera.
Yeah.
They're actually doing a whole lot of jobs for the pharmacy. They're making sure that the stand's in the good spot because they all want to get the best spot. There's all the premium spots. They want to make sure that, and they're making sure the stand is full.
Course.
So it looks good,
yeah,
and it's got the right product on it,
yeah,
that sells, and the good products are at the top, and the less selling products maybe at the bottom. There could be some art and some science associated with this, and it's all well priced,
yeah,
and it's well merchandised. In other words, there's a sign on it which says, you know, these socks are made 100% of so and so cotton or whatever the case may be,
and it works because your incentives are aligned because they obviously earn money when the sales are made by the store as well.
Yeah, so I don't own the inventory.
No.
Me, the pharmacist, I don't own the inventory.
The pharmacist buys the inventory.
He buys the inventory.
The agent doesn't own it, but essentially they're the ones that are responsible for getting the sales done in the pharmacy, and then they take a clip.
They're incentivized. Yes. So it's a sort of more of a variable cost. Okay, I get that. So now we're selling socks. What happened?
So the socks is going around Australia. It's become quite a successful business, but essentially it's not my father's brand, and it's not really a brand. It's a commodity good, you know. And you see
it's
now.
It's like everybody else's stuff.
If you go to chemists, we obviously go anywhere, you'll see socks and locks. It's everywhere around Australia.
Oh, still, socks and locks.
Socks and locks, exactly.
What's locks?
I think it's just a nice pun and a nice...
Oh, there's no locks. They're not selling locks or something.
No, I'm going
to take more notes when I go to one of these chemist warehouses joints.
That's exactly the point. You wouldn't have noticed it because it's not a brand. It wasn't a recognizable brand. And that's where my dad came in. The dad had retired and he got itchy feet, and he came in and he said to Neil, who was his best friend for 20 years, he's like...
That's Elliot's dad, yep.
Elliot's dad.
Oh, they're mates anyway.
Oh, we grew up together. We've been best family friends for 30 years doing something called Pasta Night on us every fourth Sunday with five families. So we're brothers and they're brothers. Dad came in and said, look, I'm bored. I'm looking for things to do. You've got a genius.
Did your dad sell his business
sold the business.
And did your dad sell his pharmacy?
Yeah.
Yep. Okay.
And he was doing the socks thing.
Yeah.
And dad came over and said, look, I know clothing. Let me go and find you. You've discovered that in this channel you can sell non-pharmacy goods.
So Elliot's dad, Neil.
Yeah.
He had good distribution.
Elliot's dad had distribution.
Yep.
And a different, a channel where he could sell something that was different.
Yeah,
that was, okay. It was unique.
Right. Yep. Totally.
Dad had the clothing background, and he knew what it was like to supply successful brands, not run successful brands at that point. So Dad came to Neil and he said, "Look, Neil, let me go and find something that fits this same model, but we can build a brand and give the consumer in a pharmacy who cares about their health, their wellness, and generally, as a result, the wellness of the planet."
So was it, how many years ago is this?
This is in 2012.
So is this around the time when health and wellness and all that sort of stuff kicked off? I mean,
we've been exceptionally lucky, and business is filled with a lot of luck and a lot of hard work and skill.
Well,
someone
recognised health and wellness, so I mean, they read it.
Yeah, we've been on that wave for sure.
Yeah, so it's around about 2012. That's sort of, I mean, it's always been around, but like it started to become heavily sort of franchised, so to speak.
Yeah, but now the tailwind is there.
Yeah, really. It's 100% now. Also, you got the online environment now. But like, so
Dad cruises over to Asia and he starts looking for something different, some product, something. He doesn't know what he's looking for. And he discovers this bamboo viscose yarn. And he cannot believe how soft it is. That's where it all started. He just hadn't felt such a... He'd been in manufacturing for 30 years and he hadn't felt something so soft.
Bamboo, where did he find it?
He went to... There's a lot of fairs.
Shows.
Shows, trade fairs, etc.
So anyone who's listening, these fucking trade shows are so important.
Yeah.
Like, so important. Doesn't matter whether it's clothing or whether it's electronics or technology, etc. They are so, like, you learn so much shit, and it's all in one place.
And and it doesn't matter if it's on the on the product development side or on the sales side. We go now to Expo West, which is the biggest health and wellness expo in the world, over in Anaheim in California every year, and we exhibit there. But we also just go and just talk to people and learn from people, and there's talks, and they're unbelievable.
Yeah, they're, I mean, I implore you, if you're involved in trying to build up a new product, that you should attend wherever that happens to be. Like, big ones in America, they're great. I mean, especially when it comes to technology. I've been to a few myself. But by the way, if you've got a product, you've got to tell the world about it. And I mean, everyone keeps talking about the social medias, but that's great. But I mean, there's no better place than at a trade fair.
Yeah.
So your dad, Sean, has found this beautiful product.
So Dad discovers this yarn and he comes back to Neil and says, "Look, you're doing something great. Let's do it better." So they start off with undies and socks. We had 9 SKUs. They started very, very, very...
9 SKUs means what? 9 product lines?
No, actually 3 product lines.
3 product
lines. 3 sizes.
3 sizes, okay.
They were so strict about not introducing too much.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it's obviously risky, that they didn't even do small, medium, large. They did small and medium large across 3 products. So it was actually 6, not 9.
Right.
And they did a classic bikini, a midi brief, and one of our other women's underwear lines. And 1 sock. And they put that into a couple of Neil's good mates' pharmacies. And lo and behold, it rocketed out the door. The way that they did that was the undies were in a box like this.
Yep.
And that goes back to our square meter discussion.
Right. So and by the way, we're talking about now about marketing packaging. So I want to come back to that in a second. So we'll go to the break. But I mean, I've got the socks here in front of me. I had the advantage of getting a t-shirt from you guys some time ago. I must say it does feel very soft and wearable. To be frank with you, I haven't worn. I wore it. I tried it on. I haven't worn it because I just, I'm one of those people who just keeps wearing the same shit all my life. But I will try it again.
We'll switch you over to our shit soon.
Okay, cool. Because I just don't want to throw stuff away. That's all. Because I mean, I wear it until it's got holes in it and it's ready to be thrown. Even then, I still wear it. But I'm just feeling the socks here, and they are beautiful and soft.
Those are our crew boot socks. So they're actually made for winter and the colder months. But the great thing about bamboo, and this way it worked in pharmacies, was it's got a whole lot of health and wellness qualities.
We're going to come back to that. We're going to go to the break. And when we come back from the break, I actually want to talk about the product, the features of the product. I want to talk about the pricing. And I want to talk about how you market it in terms of your packaging. And that's really important. That's pretty good packaging I'm looking at right now. And that tells me the story straight up. We'll talk about that. We'll go to the break and we'll come back. Okay, we're back from the break, and I'm talking to Sean and Elliot. Their two dads kicked off this business called Booty, which is bamboo-based
Basic essentials.
Basic essentials, which means, you know, loungewear, pajamas, socks, t-shirts, gym wear.
With no embellishments. Well, you'll never see a brand or a like big hyper colors and marks and stripes and stuff on our stuff.
Good, because all that stuff shits me anyway.
We're all wearing the same thing.
Mate. I just want to wear it. I have to be honest here, I don't want to walk around advertising someone's stuff. And we know the brands that make you do this when you buy it because they're not paying me. I'm not going to pay to advertise someone's stuff. Forget it. I got to wear something plain.
Yeah, it's funny. Philosophically, it also presents a marketing challenge for us because we have hundreds of thousands of people wearing our stuff, but no one knows it because they're not walking around with it on the street. But that's deep in our philosophy. We want you to be comfortable in your own skin. We want you to be you. And we want you to be comfortable wearing our product. And that means like we don't need you to tell the world that you're wearing our product. It's all about fostering our brand, fostering our community, and that's how we've grown.
And not just that, the product is usually below several layers because the lion's share of what we sell is the underwear. So even if we wanted to show it in terms of the branding, most people
or it's worn at home and no one else is going to see it.
Exactly.
Like it's loud. So exactly. How did you two boys get involved in the business? I mean, the sons of the dads. I mean, in 2012, and here we are 28 years later. Yeah. It's not that long ago. Are your dad still involved in the business?
Very much so.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. So yeah. 2013 launched sold the first pair of undies.
Yeah.
2014, we were in probably by that stage 200 pharmacies because of Neil's hard work and network. And they came to me, I was doing some other stuff, and they came to me and said, hey, you know a bit about technology. Can you, we hear this thing about online. Can you, help us work it out? So I was doing some other stuff, and I spun up a crappy website at that stage in my spare time. And lo and behold, what I found was all the metrics were amazing. Like, we weren't selling, there's a whole lot of metrics in e-commerce, average transaction value, conversion rate, etc. What I was finding was our ATV. So we were selling not one, not two, but like four or five units in an order off nothing, no marketing, no nothing. And what I realized was happening going and speaking to customers was people would be in line at a pharmacy. They'd see our booty stand and they would, see the undies and they go, oh, that's interesting. Bamboo. That's kind of unique. They'd feel it because we got a little fabric swatch on the stand. They go, oh, that's comfortable. $12.95 for a pair of Brookies. Let me, I'll give it a go while I'm waiting at the checkout. And what happens when you buy a pair of undies that you love? You go and buy one for every day of the week. So they'd search us online and they'd go and buy. So I immediately saw this opportunity. And it took about three or four tries of our dads asking me to join the business to help push this along. And on the fourth time I joined, so that was 2015. And what I brought to the business was obviously that e-commerce technology piece, but also kind of operational diligence and structure and, strategy, which I'd learned from my background. So I spent about 50% of my time building the e-commerce business, which was zero back then, 2014, 2015. Today it's about 70% of revenue.
Right. But you still need the physical outlets because that's a great awareness.
We are so grateful.
Absolutely.
For that.
And that's, I think, in today's day and age, when you're running a website, a lot of people try to do direct to consumer websites. So you start from the website and no physical presence. But essentially, because a lot of advertising dollars have moved online, the return rates on advertising have gotten much lower and the bids on certain terms have gotten much higher. So it's harder to make a profitable direct-to-consumer company if you don't have the physical presence. So this multidimensional approach that we have allows us to bring down your customer acquisition cost because we've got these organic stands in 1,500 stores around Australia that act as little billboards for ourselves.
Essentially, we have 1,500 stores, but we don't pay rent. We don't pay staff.
Well, that's a killer normally because they feel as though they've got 50 lines or 50 products within their range, which means they've got to have their own store, which means they've got to pay rent, and the rent kills you. Whereas you don't pay any rent for your little square meter or whatever it is.
We pay margin.
You pay margin, which is a variable cost.
Correct.
Yeah, so it's much better.
Yes.
You got the best of both worlds. You got online and you got 1,500. So can I just talk to you about the product itself? So there's a number of products here in front of me. We've got you know, stuff you wear to bed. What do you call it? Bedwear or something. I don't know what you
call loungewear, it. Sleepwear.
Loungewear, sleepwear. And there's something here for kids, onesies. And you've got men's undies over there. I can see I've got T-shirts there. I was touching a pair of socks earlier on. What about, say, compression wear? Do you make compression wear?
Yeah, we've started in the active line, but we're not yet into the real performance wear for men, so I wouldn't say.
What about for women? Do you have, like, what do you call the stuff they wear to go to yoga?
We have leggings and tights.
Tights.
Yeah, there's a pair right there.
Right, okay. And are they, in terms of tights, are these proper compression?
No, so we are not trying to compete with the technical performance wear guys. We are trying to make your they're perfect for yoga. They're perfect to wear to the yoga class or gym and at the yoga class
right.
or gym.
So in terms of your how many products do you now have?
We have four collections. You touched on them there. We started with our basics range. So we got Booty Basic, which is men's and women's basic essentials, undies, socks, T-shirts, leggings, etc. We then launched Booty Baby because all the mums mostly that were buying our clothes were saying, it's so soft, I'm wrapping my baby around it. So we launched Booty Baby. So that's the same beautiful yarn for zero newborns to 2 years old. We launched then Booty Active and we've recently, just over the last 6 months, launched Booty Lounge, which is lounge and sleepwear because the same thing, our customers were saying, hey, I wear your T-shirt all day and then I come home and take it off and put on another one because it's so comfortable.
And Peter Alexander's got some sort of brand that seems to be dominant. I see it at airports and see it everywhere. I guess you're taking on people like Peter Alexander?
Yeah, I'd say, look, there's several incumbents in the industry, but essentially we have the end goal, or we call it our BHAG, our big, hairy, audacious goal, to become the most loved, everyday, sustainable basics brand in the world. And we're still in the early days of that journey, but essentially when you go to buy underwear or socks, and obviously it's different for a male and female, but probably in your mind you're thinking Bonds, Jockey, Hanes, Calvin Klein, a couple of others. Yep. Like, we want to ensure that Booty is in that consideration set and high up so that when you open your drawer in a couple of years' time, it's filled with Booty.
Well, that's funny because, I wear T-shirts. I wear Calvin Klein T-shirts. The only reason I wear them because the fabric's good. It's got a little bit of stretch in it. I can wear it to the gym. I can wear a white T-shirt to bed, and I don't wear white T-shirts. You know, I just wear a black T-shirt at the gym, or I can wear it here. I've got one on now. I've had difficulty finding long sleeve T-shirts, because nobody seems to want to make them. And in the winter, I wear a long sleeve T-shirt with a short sleeve T-shirt over top of it.
We'll get you some.
So you're the long sleeve T-shirt.
I'm going to take mine off.
No, I'm not going to wear it.
We've never done this in an interview, right? Here you go.
Thanks very much. What size is it?
It's a large.
How long have you been wearing it for? And where'd you lounge last night? But thank you. Well, it's funny because I haven't been able to find anything. I used to be able to buy Calvin Klein used to do it. So my question to you is, how do you replace that? How do you get me to, apart from what you've just done now, how do you get me to start putting Booty in my drawers instead of Calvin Klein? Because that's the deal, isn't it?
Yeah.
If you can start convincing people like me to change over.
Yeah, of course. And I think the first part is what Sean was mentioning before in terms of awareness. You have to see it somewhere and you have to try it somewhere to really get hooked into the brand, because we know that it's all about the comfort of the product
yep.
that really bring people in. But an additional point of that is that we are sustainable. And I think in today's day and age, the tailwind of sustainability is huge. And when you can provide that to a customer.
Well, what does that mean, sustainable? I mean, that could mean many things. What do you mean by sustainable? Relative to say, I don't know, whatever I got on now, I got a cotton T-shirt on.
You know, I think a lot of the big brands are jumping on the sustainability bandwagon because it's the thing at the moment. Mm. But for us, it's really about being considered and thoughtful from supply chain all the way through to when you get your garments. So everything from ethics around our manufacturers and working very closely with them.
Explain
to make
that
sure
how that works. Tell
fair
me.
Labor, fair pay, non-abuse, no child labor, etc.
How do you? I mean, all right, that's the story you want to tell, but how do you assure that that's a difficult one?
We keep a very close relationship with a very small amount of suppliers, work very closely with them, and also ensure that there's external certification on every single one of those suppliers and the factories that they use.
Yeah, are you saying to me, I didn't know this, but is there such a concept that there's a certification as
sure.
to something?
Absolutely. There's multiple. So
at a consumer level, I can read it or something.
Absolutely.
Is it on the label or something?
It's on our, box. You can also go to our website and there's a page up there which shows all our certifications.
Right, because that's interesting. That hasn't – we don't think about that much. We don't talk about that much, you know what I mean?
Yeah, we should.
We should. Society should, but it's not a discussion.
It's definitely growing.
I'd like to be sustainable.
There's unfortunately been some catastrophes with some of the bigger retailers' supply chains over the last couple of years, which have brought a lot of light to it, which we think is a great thing. But it goes beyond that for us. It's also about the way that we transport goods. So really focusing on no out of stocks, because what out of stocks means you have to air freight. Air freight has a greater carbon footprint than shipping. So making sure we're in stock all the time, and that's obviously got benefits for the consumer. Everything to our packaging, we use no plastic across our packaging at all.
That kills me.
So, and bamboo itself, of course, is one of the biggest sustainability points, in the sense that it uses 10% of the water that cotton uses in order to grow. It's highly
big deal
renewable
in Australia.
Exactly, it's highly renewable. It's self-regenerating.
Is it actually bamboo?
Actually bamboo, hard stick that...
Yeah, there's a lot of forms of bamboo. I mean, what are we talking about here? Like there's the skinny ones or the big thick ones that grow at about a metre a day?
Yeah, it's a specific family. I forget the exact name of bamboo, but it's exactly the one that's in your mind. It's the one that grows up to a metre a day, which obviously is great for the environment because you don't have to pump it with
it's
a whole lot
of grass,
fertilizer.
It's not just a grass, but it's a grass.
It's a grass. It's organically grown and you say it's a grass, you mow the lawn, you cut bamboo and it regrows. You don't have to re-harvest it every season, which is hugely, hugely labor-intensive, material-intensive, et cetera.
Right, I got bamboo at my farms, and just because I like the look of it, and it's ridiculous how fast it grows, and I do nothing to it, zero. Mm. I don't have to put any fertilizer, nothing. Mm. It just fucking grows.
So that's the root of it for us. It's having a thoughtful approach to first product and what materials can we use, and you know, bamboo's been our hero up until
who
now.
Who the hell worked out this bamboo could be turned into a T-shirt?
I know, it's incredible.
But who did that? Where did that come from?
Dad's done a lot of work into this, and essentially what they do is they get the long stick, they cut it down, they grind it into a pulp, they mix it with the solution, and then they spin it into a yarn, and it comes out this beautiful soft thing.
And what about in terms of color? In sustainability sense, is your color... Have you gone so far as to try and get the colours to be sustainable?
Yeah, we use all sustainable dyes, of course, but also because we're a basics range, we're black, white, light mull, dark mull, that's it.
It's very much got the makings of what's a bit of a term right now is the slow fashion movement. So you've got the fast fashion guys that are churning out styles.
Kills me. They throw so much shit away. It's ridiculous. I mean, their stuff's so cheap.
Yeah.
And they fill the stores up with it. Like literally every 2 months they've got a new range. And I know that they don't sell it. I mean, especially at the moment when the stores were empty, people go to the stores and they're throwing the shit away.
Yeah.
I hate it. I hate the thought of it.
So there's a real trend towards basic essentials and the slow fashion movement. Essentially, people buying less but of better quality. And this really kind of addresses that.
So sustainable is not just, it's not just the materials that go into making this, but it's the fact that it lasts.
Correct.
One of the reasons it lasts... or a sustainable, because it lasts, is because it's not fashion. And it's, you know, there's not 10 colours. There's no reds and pinks and blues and greens. It's, you know, a colour that is like a classic colour, black, grey, white, tend to sort of go with everything.
Yeah, and we're not chucking things out. We're not burning products. Like
You're quite happy if people keep your product for a long period of time.
100%.
Yeah.
100%.
I mean, your business model relative to the fast fashion is that the fast fashion business model is that people keep turning the shit over and you actually make it so that it doesn't last, and you make it so it is only fashionable for a period of time, because and then someone looks at it the next day and says, shit, that's out of fashion, I've got to wear, got to get the next thing. That's their business model. Mm. Your business model is diametrically opposed to that.
Correct.
Your business model is, I want you to buy, I want you to keep it, and you're going to keep wearing it for a long time.
That's right.
But we also have the business model that you will always need underwear. Doesn't matter what it is.
Underwear wears out. Funnily enough, I mean, you know, like you've got to turf it.
Yeah, exactly. So
you can compost ours, actually.
Can you really?
Chuck it in the compost, yeah.
Yeah, is that right?
Yeah.
So, with the worms?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. That's myself, cool. Interesting. Okay, I've got a compost bin at home. It needs a bit extra compost. So, philosophically, I quite like that. I mean, it appeals to me. But that's a survey one. How do you get your awareness out there? I mean, how are you telling your story, apart from coming on my podcast, which is going to tell it to hundreds of thousands of people, how do you tell your story? Because it's the story that's really important. The story is going to help me buy it. Apart from, I mean, it's brilliant that it's at the checkout in pharmacies. Where else you got it?
Believe it or not, we actually haven't done a huge amount of marketing to date.
That's right, because I've checked it out.
Yeah.
I looked it up. I've looked you up, you know, and I did it early this morning. So how are you going to sort of turbocharge this?
Good question. I mean, I think we are at that point where we've proven the model and we're so confident in the ability to push it further. But as I said, we've grown organically up until now. So going forward, it's about further honing in on the brand and essentially bringing our community further together. We have such a love for the brand and there's such a tailwind behind the sustainability movement.
Bring those two together though. Like, let's say, how do you get a Sass and Bide moment where you get, you know, one of the Kardashians wearing it in New York, you know, or somehow telling everybody, or a photograph of them at home with your gear on? I mean, how do you get that Sass and Bide moment?
We're at the inflection point now where we're actually thinking. So up until now, the only marketing we've done has been very direct online, basically Google, Instagram, Facebook, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I looked at your Instagram stuff. Yeah, I mean, it's okay, but like it's not going to turn me over, you know. I'm not going to jump, wow, fuck, I've got to get that shit.
Yeah, so we're at the inflection point now where we're putting together the plan of how do we really.
So are you talking about like now influencers?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so what sort of person would, in an ideal world, who would?
I'll give you an example. Actually, our partners in America, they're our distributors there. They work with a PR firm, and the PR firm has this store where influencers and celebrities can come and try on products.
Yep.
Lo and behold, a few days later, on her Instagram, Emily Ratajkowski.
Explain that one.
I didn't know it either, Mark.
She was she became famous on the Robin Thicke music video.
Blurred Lines.
She's
incredibly good looking woman and she's got 26 million followers on Instagram
fuck?
And she posted a video wearing a booty bra.
All right.
Very, very clear.
And can you explain how that all works though? Like, I mean, so you understand it, but like we've got a lot of people listening to this.
Yeah.
There are stores in America.
Well, this is a PR firm in the States that our partners in America work with. And one of the ways that the PR firm gets awareness for their brand to people of influencers is they have this this cool store in LA that celebrities and influencers can come to get products for free, try them on. And if they like them, they can then start working with the brand.
Right.
And essentially, booty is promoted in that store, and
do you have to pay for that?
Yes, you pay a retainer to the PR firm,
right,
to be in that store.
Right. Okay. I mean, just so everyone gets a bit of an idea, like, is that an expensive retainer? I mean, you got to pay 100 grand or 20 grand or
no? I believe it's about 5 grand a month. US.
$5,000 a month. Yeah. So, and you just send your stuff over, and the celebrities go to these stores and hang out, and they probably get in there for free, and they can try and wear or take away whatever they want. There's no obligation. If they like it, they can put up on their own stories.
They put it up on their stories, and for us, it's amazing because it was completely organic in the sense that if, as a brand, you want to work directly with Emily Ratajkowski to promote your product, you're talking six figures easily.
Right.
But what happened was there was a tailwind off the back of that. Even we didn't even have to push it that hard, but there was a People magazine article about Emily Ratajkowski wearing booty. There was another article. So all of this, it kind of fuels the fire once the influencer thing starts getting.
So can I ask you this, Sean? Once you saw she put this up on Instagram, did you then have like a PR machine here to get behind it and start pushing it out everywhere, make sure People magazine wrote about it? What did you do? Or just to catch you unawares?
Well, essentially, again, you got to be careful with what you do with it then because she's not officially supporting your brand, and
right,
there's a whole bunch of legalities.
There's rules around that.
Yeah, exactly. But the PR firm in America that our partners work with did do whatever they could, and essentially it got it into People's magazine. Then, and now there's talk about what else we can do with it. It's a bit of a sensitive time at the moment because of everything that's going on in America, so they've held back a little bit on the hard push. Yeah. but it's, yeah, there's a lot of opportunity.
And how did you support it, Sean, like your area of expertise, like how do you support something like that with like landing pages, et cetera? I mean, like, and or understanding the metrics and, you know, and what worked and what didn't work and then how to boost it.
We're lucky. We've got a whole team around that now. We've got a head of online. We've got a whole creative team who are working off the back of those kind of things. But really, it's about having it's staying ahead of the curve as well.
Yeah, totally.
Using the metrics, pulling different levers to take advantage of those opportunities and others. One challenge that an opportunity like that brings is having enough stock to actually sell off the back of that.
And not so using air freight.
Yeah, totally. I think we sold, what was it, like 8,000 bras off the back of that post or something. It's crazy. And they ran out of stock.
This is in America? Or?
Yeah, these are our American partners. So we have distribution agreements with people that we give the license to overseas.
Right.
So we run brand and product and they sell the product.
Yeah, yeah, totally. So they're doing it in America for you. So how many countries are you selling into?
We're in about 17 now through five key distributors.
Right. So yeah. The Americas?
The Americas, the guys in America, they run America, Canada, and the UK.
Yep.
Then we have the Scandinavia region.
Yep.
Then we have a distributor in Japan, a distributor in Korea, and then we have a distributor in South Africa as well.
Wow.
And New Zealand.
And New Zealand, of course.
We can't forget New Zealand. And you guys manage it here in Australia. So what are the next steps for you? Where are you going to go to? I guess you're not going to try and do too many more product lines because it gets a little bit clumsy after a while, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. I think, look, I mentioned before, brand marketing huge for us in terms of next step because we know we've got something extremely special here and we know there's a huge tailwind of in the sustainability movement.
Talk about that now. Tailwind. You had COVID. People have been staying home, haven't been going to the shops.
Correct.
What the fuck happened? I mean, have they gone and looked, have they gone searching, looked shit up and all of a sudden you're getting more work through, more orders through this period?
Yeah, look, so it's almost guilty to talk about, but I think COVID actually did do some wonders for our business.
And lots of other businesses, by the way. That's great.
We were lucky that the lounge and sleepwear line was relaunching at about the time that we all went into lockdown. And, of course, people want to be comfortable when they're at home.
Especially when they're on a Zoom call.
Absolutely. Doesn't matter what's on top, but at least, you know, what's on bottom, you want to be
very
comfortable.
Wear your shirt and tie and just wear whatever you like. Wear nothing underneath you want. I mean, but what you're doing here is you're promoting a product that actually fulfills that sort of
screams comfort. Absolutely.
We're also really lucky that our wholesale channel actually remained open. We were one of the many few. You know, we're in 40% pharmacies, 40% natural grocers.
Because they're considered essential services.
Yeah, so that channel remained open for us as well. So our wholesale could keep firing, could keep pushing. And then online, I think we followed a trend that was a greater trend where online picked up.
So what would you have picked up? Like in terms of, I mean, I guess you've got a fair idea where your percentages are. You know, would you have had a 20% pickup in online or is it particular items or product lines?
We had about almost a 200% pickup.
Whoa.
We had some of our best months, but I feel
embarrassed to nearly say that.
I do, and I want to caveat that because at the beginning of COVID, we got early wind of it because of our supply. It started in Asia, right?
Our
supply chain. So we got early wind, and we started planning for the worst, and we did a lot of things. We looked at our cash flow. We reforecast. We put all our entire team went to 4 days a week so that we could cut, and we are unbelievably grateful to our employees for that. Everyone's since come back up, but we all took a hit. And what ended up happening was we planned for the worst, and we actually had a pretty good couple of months.
And I'll also say that's hugely credited to what our dads have built, in the sense that a lot of businesses today, they start with the brand and marketing first, and let the profit or acquisition of their business come later. Where we were profitable from day one. So when a pandemic hits and shit really hits the fan, we aren't in a position where we're necessarily going to be wiped out so quickly. We can kind of...
You got a balance sheet.
Yeah.
And you've accumulated something.
We had the cash flow to get us through, and we were always confident that we'd come out the other side.
Subject of not going in for 10 years or something along those lines. And you're not reliant on people traveling from overseas to buy your product. I mean, actually, the other way, people stay at home, they're more likely to buy a product.
I think we're also just lucky that we are online, and because of all the great work that Sean did, our online website is essentially, I believe, second to none. And so the trend of consumers switching online, as you saw, has been accelerated. So as an example, you know, my mother was not one that always shopped online before, but obviously COVID forced her to. She doesn't really want to go back to not shopping online because she loves it and it's efficient and it works. So you've seen a whole swath of the population who didn't even consider online shopping before moving online. And so in terms of searches,
it's been a big sort of compulsory education.
Absolutely. It's a macroeconomic trend.
Something you could never have done. I mean, none of us could ever educate people in this regard to sort of get them to turn them over to buying online.
You're saying it's been a modern industrial revolution as a result of COVID, and it's just been fast tracked.
For some.
For many.
Yeah. For those who are clever enough to get on board or had that sort of business, that they could do that. I mean,
it's those industries that lent itself. So it's e-commerce, it's telehealth, it's education online. It's these that were growing at a certain clip that have now just absolutely been
and were able to innovate. There are so many people out there who are doing what you just said. They have gone, shit, hang on, here's a moment. There's some change here, some structural change, which happens very rarely, maybe every 10 years. How can I take advantage of that structural change? A bit like you're thinking when you heard this was happening in Korea and China and everywhere else, when probably from your manufacturers, is that what you're saying?
Yeah, well, I mean, we were so scared at the beginning. From a production perspective, we didn't know that we could actually get our stuff over around the world to actually sell.
So you had to innovate.
Yeah,
totally. And you had to start doing stuff.
Well, I guess we just caught wind of there's a potential disruptor to all forms of the retail chain coming. It's just that the supply is at the very start and obviously the consumers at the end. So
We started at supply and we went through and moved all the way through to the consumer. And how can we get ahead of the curve? How can we protect ourselves against this? How can we innovate to make sure that we get through this and actually thrive through it? And what ended up happening was we were able to thrive.
And that's to me, look, we keep getting hit up about all the bad stories, and there are lots of bad stories, and I really do feel bad for those people. I mean, I empathize with them and I sympathize with them as well. But equally, what we've got to do is we've got to celebrate those people who have done innovative things and have come out of this well. I feel guilty, you feel guilty, because our sales are up. We don't like to see our friends and or our fellow small business owners suffer. Mm. I don't want to see anybody suffer. I mean, I want everyone to do well, if that was at all philosophically possible. But at the same time, we've got to celebrate when people do a bloody good job, which is what you guys have done.
Yeah.
So we shouldn't feel bad. Mm. Don't feel bad.
But also feel really grateful, I think.
Grateful is important. That's what you should feel.
For us, it's our dads have set this business up for success. There's no doubt about that. And their learnings of 30, 40 years of career experience where they've had some hard knocks allowed them to set this business up so that we could come in and provide our expertise as young, dynamic, entrepreneurial, growth-minded people, but we would never be enjoying the same success as we are today, and hopefully there's a lot more to come.
But Sean, it's symbiotic. Your dads were probably saying, thank God those two boys got involved in the business.
Yeah, so essentially
it's symbiotic. Feeding off each other.
The analogy is often that if we're steering the Titanic, they're at the front looking for icebergs.
Yeah. I get that. And you guys are out the back singing, let's get on with it. Well, no, I always give everyone an opportunity to ask me a question. So you guys got a question for me?
Yeah, we do actually. And one thing that we're grappling with and seeing a lot of these days is that dichotomy between profitability and growth, right? So do you grow a business sustainably, profitable from day one, grow slower? Or do you burn cash, do you lose money, and then hope for the big payday one day because you're in many more people's homes? And it's something that we're grappling with all the time. And at this inflection point, it's interesting to hear your...
Well, and I'll just add, it's very much in the consumer products world because it's a market share land grab often. And then a lot of these brands will grab market share and then hope for the big acquisition by a large incumbent because they don't have as much research and development themselves. So it's whether you really go full throttle on that marketing brand side and let essentially the profit come later, or do you continuously chip away day by day hoping to become that big brand in a longer timeline, which we're very confident we can do.
So I always say when you're in business, you've got to work out right from the very beginning, everything you do has got to be about what you propose your exit to be. Now, what I mean by that, your exit is either you are building your business for sale one day, or to be listed, or you're building your business because you want to do what your dads did. You want to hand your business over your kids, and it's a family business, and therefore it's going to be a dividend-based business, which means profitability. Kerry's view was we build this business to sell because we're in an industry which is full of behemoths, massive giant organisations who are always looking for points of difference, but they can't build it themselves. You know, like a bank, for example, could never build a nimble, fast market growth, market share type business like Wizard, because banks just can't do that. They just don't have the ability to do that. In our case, Kerry Packard took the view that when we General Electric came along, that that's another good example. General Electric could never build a new business, never, because they're just too big. They don't have the ability to be fast. They're not entrepreneurial like you guys. So Kerry took the view as if you've got a rising tide and that's your objective day one is to build for sale or build for listing, then you take market share as much as you possibly can. You put your ears back, your bum up, and you go 100 miles an hour. Alternatively, if you want to build a business that is sustainable as opposed to the product being sustainable, it's sustainable, something you want to leave to your kids and your family, then you build a business nice and slow and you just keep building up your retained earnings. So for me, it's about picking day one where you want to, how you want to exit this. Do you want to exit it by succession, family, or do you want to exit by sale? If you want to exit by sale and if the tide is rising for you right now, take as much money off the table as you possibly can. In other words, build your market share. Go for it. Go hard. But you better make sure you know who's your buyer. You better make sure that you're building your business for that type of buyer. I don't mean the particular individual, but that type of buyer. So we're always building our business for a challenger to come and take on the Australian banks. And we found General Electric, which is what they always wanted to do. We always knew that General Electric wanted to own a bank or something like a bank in Australia. We didn't think we'd get them, but that was our target. And what did they need? They needed systems, they needed entrepreneurship, they needed a culture, things they can't build, and they needed market share. And that's what we did. And I had a media partner, so that helps me build my brand, but I had a media partner. So I always wanted to have a media partner because I didn't want to spend money on media because it's too expensive. And I didn't really know how to do it to be honest with you. So I had someone like that telling me, this is how you do it and this is where you spend it and this is the best price you can get it for because, you know, I'm advertising with them and they get me best price. So I know it's a complex answer, but it's your starting point is, are you there for sale one day and you might want to sell out and, you know, it doesn't mean you two don't have to go in business, you go back into business, do something else for that matter, or you just might want to rest in 5 or 10 years. So to be honest with you, it's those personal outcomes you want to achieve and when you want to achieve them, and then you go hard based on that. Does that work for you?
Yeah. Very helpful.
Fantastic.
I love this. I really love the products. We didn't get to talk about your packaging. Look, I have to tell you, anybody's listening to this, go and have a look at this packaging if you go to a pharmacy, and this packaging is very good. It's actually quite subtle. It's meant to be touched and looked at. It's got good explanations on the side. It talks about its proposition, its philosophy. It's pretty cool. And this is marketing. This is real merchandising for me, packaging. Mm-hmm. And what's inside is really important too. That's also merchandising because that's what it feels like when it's on, et cetera, and how does it wear. But this is the starting point, and probably the starting point's on the stand.
Well, it all goes back to that most profitable square meter in someone's store. And obviously to make it that most profitable square meter, you've got to have stuff that can sell itself. So we obviously need to invite the customer in through the stand, and we have side panels that really have an amazing storytelling aspect to it, and invite them in to essentially get that first impulse buy, and then we know that they come back.
Then you'll nail them.
Yeah.
Guys, well done. I love Booty. Cool stuff.
Thanks for having us, Mark.
Thanks, Mark.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.